The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Every morning is a new opportunity to take in the news of the day and the challenges of life and try to make sense of it all. Right now, we've got a show that tackles the topics and asks what you think. So get ready to start your day with a bold look at history as it happens. Let's learn, live, and sometimes laugh together. It's the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM, The Answer.
And a good morning. It is Thursday, the 20th day of January, 2022, morning after that frightful news conference by Biden. And I know it's kind of funny. Maybe you're new to the show. It's like, oh, a conservative guy has to say that the press conference sucked. That's why it's always important to me to explain things and to say why I say things. And this is what I require of guests and callers. I think it's a good thing for us to do in any type of discourse, is rather than just having people, you know, shoot off at the mouth, tell us why you believe certain things. So why was it terrible for Joe Biden to paint a falsehood about what Republicans are trying to do in terms of election security? It is a lie. It is the lowest form of rhetorical, I need a noun. It's just a bottom feeding tactic, and it's been common to the left for a long time. Rather than argue the merits of something, just call somebody a racist. And, you know, especially now, you know, in this current era of race obsession, the major crime of which is that it has diluted and distracted any ability that we have here in 2022 to find the occasional real flare-up of racist behavior. The occasional actual racist, they can still be found, and yet it's all lost in the wash. When everybody's a racist, nobody is a racist. And so the other thing was about Ukraine, the notion of the term that leaps from the page of the transcripts this morning, minor incursion. If you are in Ukraine, what incursion by the Russians is minor? If I'm surrounding your house, to what extent that I enter your house, is it a minor incursion? And the Biden point essentially was that there might be minor incursions that might not elicit the harshest response. And by the way, there might indeed be. But you don't telegraph that. You don't say that. And we got rid of Trump for this? People didn't like the mean tweets? I'll tell you what, Russia ain't going into Ukraine if Trump's president, because Putin doesn't know what that guy will do. Do you know what kind of value there is? Do you know what kind of safer world we have if tin horns and tyrants and terrorists and authoritarians around the world have look at the American president and go, dang, I don't know what that guy will do. That's unbelievably valuable. Right now, we have Joe Biden wheezing through a press conference and telling you exactly what he's going to do or not going to do, as the case may be. That might have been the worst policy moment of the interminable 2 hours. But I want to play you this, because this is where Grandpa gets crotchety. Philip Wegman at the Washington Post asks Joe Biden about the comparisons that he drew between those who oppose his voting bill to George Wallace and Bull Connor. Now, the George Wallace story, you really have to understand. George Wallace stood in the door of the University of Alabama and essentially said, ain't no black kids getting in here. A couple of decades later, he wins the governorship of Alabama largely on the black vote. And wow. Now, that's a story of redemption. That's a story of repair. And I'm always, always open to that. Bull Connor, please. The archetype, the word of the day, of Southern white back in the day racist law enforcement. Okay. And Joe Biden intentionally wants to draw this imagery and weaponize it and deploy it against you if you dare to stand against what the Democrat Party is trying to do, which is keep elections as loosey-goosey as they were in 2020, to dilute, to reduce election security and reliability. Things like voter ID help with that. There is no substitute for the reliability of showing up in person with an ID to vote at an actual polling place. There is no substitute for that. And the degree to which we ought to have voting by mail, voting by carrier pigeon, you know, whatever, voting by Zoom meeting, just no, no, no. Now, active duty military, of course. You know, some other slim examples of people, you know, doing absentee, fine. But the Democrat Party wishes for you know, 24-hour drop boxes. Oh, what could possibly go wrong? Because unreliable voting, less than secure voting, is what the Democrat Party wants. If you step into the arena and say, you know, I don't think that's a good idea, that no matter what color anybody is, show up at a polling place and prove you're you. And let's have one election day, or maybe two or three if we want to stretch, but these 3-4 weeks of early voting, that's for the birds too. Step forward and say those things, and you are Bull Connor. You are George Wallace. Not the later in life enlightened George Wallace, but the standing in the door of the University of Alabama George Wallace. That's you if you dare to oppose the Biden agenda. What a twisted thing to say about people. So, reporter Philip Wegman asked Biden about this. And the point that he tried to make a couple of times in the news conference is, I didn't call these people Bull Connor. I said that the choice they face in choosing them this coming election day or choosing which side to take is kind of like the choices that people faced back at these moments in history. Good Lord, talk about a distinction without a difference. You know, it's like, you know, I'm not saying you are Hitler, but if you run for office and we're choosing between you and your opponent, it's kind of like the 1933 chancellor's elections in Germany where, like, Hitler was on the ballot. It's a similar choice that people face. Right. So Philip Wegman dared to go there. And in so doing, drew, and listen, it's people can, if a politician, it's kind of funny, Trump would get angry at some of the questions, and then some of the moments would be pretty awesome. A righteous Newt Gingrich in some debate questions, righteous indignation can sometimes work well for you. See if this strikes you as that.
More, sir. You know, you campaigned and you ran on a return to civility, and I know that you dispute the characterization that you called folks who would oppose those voting bills as being Bull Connor or George Wallace, but you said that they would be sort of in the same camp.
No, I didn't say that. Look what I said. Go back and read what I said and tell me,
dude,
if you think I called anyone who voted on the side of the position taken by Bull Connor that they were Bull Connor.
And
that is an interesting reading of English. I assume you got into journalism because you like to write.
So did you expect that would work with Senators Manchin or Sinema?
No, here's the thing. there's certain things that are so consequential. You have to speak from your heart as well as your head.
Okay, what? Well, for, and by, I'm sorry, I put Phil Wegman in the Washington Post. He's not in the Washington Post. He writes for Real Clear News. First of all, just the anger. Good Lord, Joe, calm down. And sometimes, so sometimes things are so important you have to speak from your heart. Well, okay, I get, so you're speaking from your heart and insulting millions of Americans with a false smear of racism. Oh, but it's okay because he's speaking from his heart. Really?
I was speaking out forcefully on what I think to be at stake. That's what it is. And by the way, no one forgets who was on the side of King or versus on or Bull Connor.
Isn't that kind of doubling down? He says, I didn't do that. And then he proceeds to do that some more.
No one. The history books will note it. And when I was making the case, don't think this is a freebie. You don't get to vote this way and then somehow it goes away. This will be stick with you the rest of your career.
Because I'm going to characterize you as Bull Connor, because I'm going to characterize you as a virulent racist. It's what I'm going to do. So this is just weird. It's disjointed. It's denial. It's incoherent. I didn't do that. I'm going to get angry at you for suggesting that I did that. And then I'm going to spend about a minute doubling down on doing that.
And long after you're gone.
And Mr. President.
Folks.
Sir, one more on your Ukraine, please, sir.
Okay.
Whoa. Okay. Anyway. Gracious me. All right, let's pause and return. A couple of other things from yesterday, a couple of other things from this morning's news, and a couple of other things, I'm sure, from you. 866-660-5759. Stuff in the news, stuff in your head, things in your life. Grab a line. 866-660-5759. Mark Davis, 660 AM, The Answer.
And though I make mistakes, I'll never break your heart.
This is a wild story. John Michael Montgomery and I Swear from 1993. Great record, and it's JMM's birthday. John Michael is 57 today. You know the crazy thing about this record is, don't you? It was a huge hit 1 year later in 1994, too, by the R&B group All For One. How many times has that happened? Wonderful song.
I love you with every beat of my heart, I swear.
All righty, 9:27. So this morning's journalism was all about slicing and dicing the Biden news conference. And on Fox, just within the last hour or so, they got Karl Rove to bring out the big whiteboard and say, how'd that Biden thing work out for you?
Well, my overall take is that there are lots of ammunition in there for the president's critics, and he gave it to them. I mean, I was taken aback with some of it. Ukraine, the minor incursion that we just talked about, terrible mistake that the Russians are going to take advantage of. No apologies for Afghanistan. He thought he did it perfect. COVID, I'm satisfied with what we've done, and I think we've done, quote, remarkably well. Voting rights, read the speech. I didn't call him a bigot and compare them to George Wallace and Jefferson Davis. If you oppose me, read the speech, which is exactly what he did. And out of touch, I thought Peter Ducey made an interesting comment. I'm not asking for castles in the air, he said. Well, here's a guy who has spent a year ignoring some of the principal concerns of the American people, including inflation, by saying it's transitory and dismissive of its effects, and by focusing on things that are being pushed by the base of his party without support from the middle, independents, and on the Congress, support from Republicans. And that's not what the American people want. They want a less partisan president, and they certainly don't want somebody who's out there on the leftward fringe playing to the base of his party.
And they even asked, I will tell you this. I didn't expect every single question to be a fawning foot rub, But I will tell you that the degree, and especially when Biden, you know, drove his communications staff crazy. In fact, Jen Psaki was on Fox with, I don't know how this went. Well, maybe we'll find out together. Was on with America's Newsroom with Bill Hemmer, Dana Perino. And it's like, how many shots was Jen Psaki doing when Joe Biden looked out over the crowd after an hour and, you know, 20 minutes and said, let's go another 20, 25 minutes. Like, oh, no, because every additional minute is an opportunity for something to go dreadfully wrong. I will tell you, consider this grace or benefit of the doubt if you wish. If you'd have told me Biden was going 2 hours, you know, without a nap and without just a complete unhinged synapse failure, I'd be surprised. So, you know, props to him for that. However, what we did wind up having is every additional minute was an opportunity to reveal the ill-placed foreign policy, to reveal the just ugly, nasty tendency to smear opponents as racist. I got to tell you, being a racist is a terrible thing. And we societally view it as being so bad that it's one of the worst things you can be attitudinally, right? That I believe is indicative of our country's enlightened heart and the goodness of the American soul, is that being an actual racist carries a stigma, as well it should. But I will tell you something that has become a national sport. And this is something that we need to rise to that level of stigma. And that is the false accusation of racism. The opportunistic, bottom-feeding, cruel, unwarranted reflex cries of racism attached to people just for daring to politically disagree with the left. That there needs to be a price to pay for that as well. And I dare say coming in November there will be. And especially in November of 2024. 9:31. Hey, let's head into the newsroom. Come back. Your thoughts are welcome. 866-660-5759. Mark Davis, 660 AM. The answer. Here's Gordon Griffin.
Will you answer to
me? I should probably play more Slim Whitman on the show.
That means I offer my love to you.
The great Slim Whitman, born this date 99 years ago, 1923. Slim made it a good ride to 2013.
If you refuse me, I will.
Indian Love Call. Could you record that today? I don't know.
But if when you hear my love call ringing clear.
That was quite the career on Slim Whitman. I'll Take You Home Again, Kathleen, Tumbling Tumbleweeds, Rosemary. That was quite the career. And of course, Una Paloma Blanca, and Rush Limbaugh. May God rest him. And his birthday would have been just a few. It was last week, right? Rush would have been 71, right? Oh, my goodness gracious me, how I miss him. And radio just ain't the same. And nothing against the people who are sort of filling that slot on some other stations around the country. And, you know, there is no replacing Limbaugh, but various providers of programming, you know, sent some folks out to do some things. They're fine. It's good. These are good shows. But there's a gaping hole in the American talk radio landscape that Rush is not around to deliver his take on. I mean, can you imagine a Limbaugh show following that Biden news conference? They say people are, that they live as long as they last in our memory. That man lives forever. The thing about Limbaugh and Una Paloma Blanca is one of the great things about Limbaugh is the humor that he brought. He, at one point, one of his bits was that he had found a satanic message in Slim Whitman's Una Paloma Blanca. All righty. 866-660-5759. Okay, let's hop to calls. Got other stuff to share with you. We are in Plano. Melissa, hey, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you?
Hey, Mark. I'm good.
Hi.
I heard your interview or your response about Van, and you did a pretty good job playing devil's advocate for him there. But from a constituent perspective, I just wanted to say, I don't see how it's possible that someone who doesn't live in our district can possibly represent us.
All right, let me lay the groundwork for people who are wondering, what is Melissa talking about? We had Keith Self on in the last hour. Keith is a primary challenger to Van, and I asked, as I will ask everybody in a primary, give me what's unacceptable about the incumbent. Why should the incumbent be fired? And I'm going to get to the one you mentioned for here in a second. Basically, it was his January 6th vote to help establish that committee. That was admittedly terrible. Voting to get rid of some of the Confederate folks in the statuary hall. Some people say that's erasing history. I think they have a good point. Being a member of the Problem Solvers Caucus, which is not great if it erodes your path toward conservative goals. So Keith and maybe the other primary challengers have found interesting things, which is the kind of things you got to look for, including like where a guy lives, if his voting record is pretty unassailable for the most part, which I think in Van's case, it largely is. You got to go looking for other things. And one of the things that Keith found is that Van ostensibly, Melissa, if you and I are ever in Congress, we ain't going to see a whole lot of our families in Texas. We're going to be in D.C. all the dang time. It splits your life apart. And what Van chose to do is apparently buy a house in McLean, Virginia, bring the family out there. And Keith's point is that cuts your ties or erodes your ties to Texas. And that seems to be your point as well, that you can't really adequately or sufficiently represent the state when you don't when you've brought the family to D.C., correct?
Absolutely. I think that if his family's not here, they're not going to the schools in the area, whether private or public. They're not attending church in the area, able to talk to neighbors, able to tell him what's impacting people who live around here, able to tell him the price of milk, the price of gas, the road conditions, the traffic, the influx of people, the effect of out-of-state policies. I mean, what does he know about us?
Okay. I will tell you, this sounds like something fresh from an opposing campaign. I don't know if you're on staff or anything, but this is total primary challenger index cards. Okay.
No, I'm not on staff. I don't appreciate how somebody can just live across the country in D.C. and then claim to represent us.
Okay.
That's part of the problem on both sides of the aisle. Let's address this. Democrats and Republicans.
Then let's address this. I think there's a good point here. I think my favorite thing is leave the family in Texas. It's going to be tough splitting time, no doubt about it. I think my favorite thing is to leave the family in Texas. I don't think he's never here at all. And he obviously, you know, puts in an appearance every once in a while. And maybe that's not enough for some people. Absolutely. And let's not make it about Van. Let's make it about anybody. Does a conservative congressman, the thing that he fights for, Does spending a large amount of time in the district, is that necessary to that? I just don't believe that it is.
If you were fighting for it, that would be one thing. Yeah. But I think that
now we get to it. Do you believe that Van cast his very unwise January 6th vote because he wasn't living in Texas long enough? Come on.
No, but I think it's indicative of his larger attitude to things.
Okay, like what? Give me something else. What is something else that slicing the pie too much toward D.C. and not enough toward the 3rd District? What would be something else that led to an unacceptable vote?
I think when you live in D.C., that mindset surrounds you. And when you're not living here and seeing what the constituents want and what our views are, then yes, you are more likely to vote for something like the January 6th Commission.
That is not an unworthy point. Van will be on at some point, and I will ask him about that because it is an absolutely fair question. I will tell you, just gut feeling, that I don't think there's a thing that changes about Van if he were slicing the residential thing any differently. I think we're picking and choosing here because the voting record is pretty. Do you consider Van's voting record to be largely flawed?
No, I think he probably voted with Trump most of the time, but I don't think that discounts the January 6th and the statute vote. And I think your take and Keith's take on the statute vote is different than what I'd say.
What's that?
For the statutes, to me, it's my understanding was those statutes are sent there by each state.
Correct.
Chosen by each state.
Correct.
Those states get to choose what their representation is there in Congress. Mm-hmm. And the vote to remove those is against the state's choice. Again, goes to that larger view. That's not a conservative perspective.
No, I completely agree with you on that.
And it's not about the Confederacy at all.
Well, I tell you what, there's some people who sought to make it about the Confederacy. Exactly. And I think that
and he fell for it.
He had some Republican help on that. I will tell you who among the North Texas delegation who did not vote for that. Beth Van Dyne, Lance Gooden, Kay Granger. Voted against the purging of the statuary hall. Melissa, wonderful call. I appreciate you. Get in touch with me anytime. I appreciate you being on the program.
Thanks, Mark.
You bet. My pleasure. We need Van ASAP. This is going to be an interesting snapshot, because when somebody's voting record is, you know, pretty conservatively thumbs up, you got to go looking for some things to either as indicative of your susceptibility to conservative collapse. People are going to be, I swear to you, people are going to be interested to know if a year down the road, or however, when did we talk to Van about that stupid commission? I don't know. Does he think better of that now? That would be a good first question. Moving the family to McLean, Virginia. Can you, geography doesn't matter to me so much. I mean, I don't need, you know, 47 town halls. Listen, Democrats are holding town halls all the time, and they're still dead wrong on everything. So it's the votes you cast and what you stand for. The statuary vote, one thing. The Problem Solvers Caucus. That pesky, infernal Problem Solvers Caucus. It is a bunch of Republicans willing to be on it. There's some interesting elbow rubbing going on there. There are a couple of Trump-hating Republicans on that. Van is certainly not that, but he's in there, you know, with those folks. And of the Democrats, to their credit, these are some of the not quite as bug-eyed radical leftist Democrats who are in the Problem Solver Caucus. So I guess, you know, we like that, right? I mean, the Democrats who are willing to talk to Republicans about some things. However, show me some Republicans willing to talk to Democrats about some things. It's like, we're caving. So one of my favorite sentences that I've crafted, you know, of late ever, is I don't send Republicans to Congress to work with Democrats. I send Republicans to Congress to beat Democrats. Now, that doesn't mean that we can't get together, we can't talk, we can't, you know, break bread. We've lost that to disagree without being disagreeable. So one of my questions I'll ask of Van is, what has your involvement in the Problem Solvers Caucus? Give me a conservative goal of yours that has been helped by trafficking with the, it's a terrible verb. We shouldn't use that anymore. It's a good verb, but don't use trafficking for anything. By walking a path in any shared space with the Problem Solvers Caucus. We're in Fort Worth. Joe, Mark Davis, happy Thursday. How are you?
It is a happy Thursday. And Mark, I tend to agree with you that I don't care about geography. Mm-hmm. I really don't. You know, what you're going to do for us, that's what counts. Mm-hmm. And by the way, is that Slim Whitman song that you played in the movie Mars Attacks?
Indian Love Song. Is it in Mars Attacks? I'm blurry.
Right at the end, that kills all the Martians.
It is distinctly possible. It's been a while since I visited Mars Attacks, but I'll have an answer for you in 30 seconds. Start talking.
Okay, so, you know, people have a tendency to be pretty forgiving on the Republican side. Look, you're going to make a mistake, we'll overlook it. If it's something that continues to be a trend, yeah, we're going to run away from it. But at the same time, this is my personal opinion, okay? I think Dan's trying to approach these things with an air of civility to try and work together. This thing about agreeing with, you know, the January 6th committee, hey, yeah, let's talk about it. If we would have gotten, you know, the people that we wanted, Jim Jordan in and the other guy, the truth probably would have come out, and I think that's partially why he tend to agree with having the committee.
You're talking about Van here? You're talking about Van Taylor?
Van.
Okay,
yes,
right. Because Dan Crenshaw's point was people were instantly coming after Liz Cheney, like me, and deservedly so, and he bristled at everybody going immediately sour on Liz Cheney. My point now is that history has proven that we were right. But go ahead, keep talking.
So, you know, I think, you know, with from Dan's perspective, it's, you know, I think approaching it with civility, I think, and it's just my opinion, there's just an air of naivete there that, you know, hey, maybe he's fresh and he's trying to find some, you know, discussion, some debate, and he was willing to try. Now, we're going to find out if this continues or not, but right now, I'll tend to stick with him.
I think there is 10 different types of wisdom in your call, Joe. I think that when you first get to Washington, maybe one of the first things you want to do is not instantly tribalize and actually be kind and decent to people, which, by the way, is great up to the point that you begin to cave on conservative values. I don't see evidence that Van's done that. I absolutely don't. Others may differ. The January 6th thing, giving some, you know, honestly, it's the same kind of thing that had Ted Cruz in a word salad calling it terrorism. That was because it's like they felt this obligation to make sure that everybody knows that we know January 6th was bad. And that if you distance from the committee, maybe it makes it look like you're a January 6th apologist. And maybe that infected Van at the time. Well, we need to see if it still does. And we'll ask him when he's on, which I hope is soon. Joe, God bless. Appreciate you. 951.
The world is full of all the people. Ooh. And we're pulling down the
among our musical birthdays, Paul Stanley of Kiss turns 70. We had Slim Whitman, which gave us a whole segment. John Michael Montgomery. And Eric Stewart of 10cc. I know it could have done I'm Not in Love or Things We Do for Love. That's great. But let's go back to For You and I. For producer Rhonda K. Moreland, technical guru Mr. Matt, thank you. News ace Gordon Griffin. I'm Mark Davis. God bless our country, our troops, our families. Have a fantastic day. Stay warm. Doggone it. See you tomorrow for the Friday show. Holy cow, another week wraps up. God bless our country, our troops, and our families. Mike Gallagher next from Vegas at the SHOT Show. Check it out. See you tomorrow.
Three-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.